What is between the ones and zeros? It's a space where data meets leadership, where culture and analytics collide, where traditional ideas of performance, leadership, and decision-making are challenged. The podcast isn't just about theory. It's about real leadership, real data, and real impact. Moving beyond the fluff, merging analytics and the human side of leadership. This is Between the Ones and Zeros.
Hey, welcome back to Between the Ones and the Zeros, where leadership meets technology, and we hang out in that wonderfully complicated space in between. I'm your host, Anthony Piccolo, founder of Performance Scoring, chief accountability nerd, and a firm believer that great leadership isn't just about data points, it's about what you do with them. I'm here to help leaders stop guessing, start tracking, and maybe even have some fun while they figure it out. And I'm joined by my awesome co-host, Dr. Chi-Chi Anyan Wu. Chi-Chi?
Leadership coach, author, proud girl mom, and your co-host on this wild ride between the ones and zeros. I'm all about bridging the gap between tech and the human heart. And I bring real talk to the digital table. Whether we are unpacking innovation or driving into personal growth, I'm here to keep it insightful, a little nerdy, and always real.
Awesome. Well, hey, today's guest is a real treat, not just because he's wicked smart and, well, kind of because he's Chi-Chi's friend, which means we already know he's got a ton of wisdom, humility, and most likely a few mic drop moments to share. We're joined by Itari Agorje, chief architect at Rackspace, who's walked the full arc from technologist to people leader. He's been the guy behind the systems, and now he's leading the humans who run them. If you've ever tried managing engineers, timelines, and emotions at the same time, you'll want to buckle in for this one.
I mean, that's someone that I deeply respect, not just because he's my friend, not just because what he builds, but how he leads. He brings a global mindset, a thoughtful spirit, and an authentic presence to his work. And I'm so excited for you to hear his take on what leadership looks like in today's digital and very human world.
Well, with that, Itari, thanks so much for taking the time with us today. It's really a joy to have you. And Dr. Chi-Chi, thanks for getting with Itari and making this possible. Itari, you've worn a lot of hats. And for somebody who has a very short hairstyle, hats do make my head itch a bit. And it's just kind of got me thinking here, with all the hats you've worn, you know, architect, strategist, people leader, which hat itched the most? And which one felt like it finally fit or fits?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I would say, to address your question, the people leadership was the hat that itched the most, because people are complicated. I think that adds a new dimension in terms of how you address issues. The hat that fit perfect for me is a strategist. I have a natural instinct for coming up with the right strategy, seeing the path within the forest, and coming up with a good approach to things. So yeah, that's kind of how that's.
No, I was just saying that, you know, that's great. I mean, you know, and how long, you know, as you've kind of moved between these roles, I mean, obviously, and there's some overlap, right? What's been your lived experience kind of when you're kind of doing both at the same time, right? Because you still have your technical job to do, and you still have your leadership job to do, and then there's this overlap. Has that rub ever kind of been tough for you or for the people that you lead?
It's been a little tough. Because right now I lead people, we develop technical projects, and you still have to ensure that you're delivering the projects correctly, you're using the right people. Being able to understand the technical scope, understand the right resources that can actually deliver on those projects, but also understand the right type of temperament. So there's a lot of different dimensions here. But at the end of the day, I think what helps me is my instinct for strategy. Because it doesn't matter, you know, what the domain is, whether it's technical, whether it's people. A strategist is a strategist, right? So it's just a different way of applying my strategy. But dealing with people is tough. So.
Well, that's where Dr. Chi-Chi comes in, because she is the dealing with people expert, like at least scientifically for sure.
So, you know, you mentioned your strategies are hard. Before I dive into my question, what is your top five in strengths? I happen to know you've done strength.
Yeah. My top five. It does change a little bit, but my first one is strategic. My second one is competition. I think my third one is focus. Fourth is individualization. And I think the fifth one, I think I have achiever. You know, they change. I think your top 10 still stay the same. but they actually change if you take them after a while. So
your top five shouldn't change. Over time, yes, you can flex some muscles. But I asked that question because it goes to show you how how your strength shows up in what is natural for you, being a strategist. And we're talking about leadership, right? No matter where you are, you're a leader. The highest form of leadership is what? Self-leadership, which is yourself. So now the question for you here is, as a strategist who have been influencing people and outcomes, how have your internal compass changed or your idea of leadership changed now that you're a leader of people?
Okay. I would say it comes back to the same thing, right? My consistent theme about people. I think people are different. They're not predictable. I think when you're doing strategy for other types of domains and different topics, whether it's technical or whatnot, there's an element of consistency, right? There's no randomness. But I think when it comes to dealing with people, there's that fuzziness. There's that element of randomness. So I think from a strategic perspective, I'm not as exact. I'm not as exact when I'm dealing with people as I am with dealing with technology and general problems. You need to leave that room for fuzziness. You need to be okay that 1 + 1, you know, is 2 or 3 in some cases. It could be 10 on a Friday and 2 on a Saturday. So it's, in a way, I kind of factor that fuzziness in my overall strategy now. So it makes things a little bit complicated, but overall, it's still the same general approach in terms of.
Give me an example. I'm thinking of somebody that is thinking of going where you are now. What example can you give them in this fuzziness? They'll give them an idea of how. What exactly you mean?
Okay, so say we have a process that we need to get some contract signed, and there is a person that's supposed to address this process, and they're not addressing the process, or there's some issue that's going on. Typically in the past, it's like, this process needs to get done. I know how to do it. I know how to drive it. But now that you're introducing the human element, right? Guess what? Either could get done or not get done. And that could be a ripple effect for so many things, right? So. Mm-hmm. And this was one of the stumbling things I had initially. I just assumed that things will get done. I thought people were just like computers or general logical things, but that's not always the case. Things happen. So you have to have that fuzzy. So in a way, it's almost like you're having plan B and plan C. Anything that you do, you always kind of have to have a backup. Because when you try to get that process done, they don't do it or they don't know how to do it. All of a sudden now you're in a bind. But when you're able to kind of say, okay, here's plan B and here's plan C, and have a plan to transition between plans as seamlessly as possible. That is the type of thing that when dealing with people that you have to be aware of or develop, you know?
Go ahead, Anthony.
No, I was just going to say, you know, one of the big differences between technology and people is technology doesn't make excuses. It just makes errors.
Thanks.
Or fails. People, when an error or failure happens, they have an excuse. And I know the last time we spoke to Atar, you mentioned, you know, you're really focused on results over excuses, right? So how do you keep that mindset alive when you know, without turning your team, you know, into some kind of pressure cooker, right? Like,
So I think there's always a balance in any system, right? So I think I'm very lax in terms, I don't micromanage my teams, right? So it's kind of like, there's always has to be give and take. So it's like, hey, I'm giving you freedom. I'm giving you flexibility. You can do whatever you want. But in return, I expect results. So it's a give and take. If I'm micromanaging people, if that was my style, if people don't get things done as much or whatnot, you know, okay, there's kind of a balance there. But when you have the freedom and you have the freedom to do whatever you want, I'm not micromanaging you, I'm giving you the tools and everything else for you to succeed in your job. The one thing I expect is results. So that's kind of how I try to balance that out.
So if I take the two things you just said about the fuzziness and balance, what I'm hearing in between the line that people thinking of leadership need to be aware of, one is clarity. You need to make sure you tell people exactly what it is that you want them to do. The other thing I'm hearing in between the lines of what you're saying is assessing. You need to be able to assess where people are and who is able to take on those roles. And also assess, is there anything going on in their lives that is hindering success?
Exactly.
Because that balance you're talking about is, how do I allow people to do things the way they want to do it, but also meet my need, right? Yeah. We still have a timeline to meet, and I am trusting your ability, and I'm giving you self-leadership to do stuff, but I need it in this time. So it's striking that balance between clarity, assessment and encouragement to make sure they stay on track.
Exactly. And I never put anybody in a situation where they have to do something that they can't do. So that's one of the goals of people leadership, is like understanding people, their capabilities, and jobs that they'll be a good fit for. So that's one thing. But again, I like everything. I'm a very results focused person. I don't care about the details. I'm very results oriented. I think in technology, there's something called in cloud, there's something called configuration management. So you don't have to worry about the details of how something works. You just describe what the end state should be. And then you could define what it is. And then the systems that actually implement that, they can figure out what to do. You don't care about that. So I take that kind of similar philosophy, because at the end of the day, what matters is results. We can come in here and be, you know, but at the end of the day, for businesses, it's all about results. It's all about solving problems. So I try to structure that with my teams as well. These are the problems. These are the results that we need. And I pair the right folks to the right problems, and then just give them everything that they need to be successful. But understand that, hey, you need to deliver. And that's what's more important.
When you're trying to match, you know, I mean, obviously you're trying to match your people to the projects, kind of like a puzzle, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are you looking for, Atari, just knowing your management style? What are you looking for in your people beyond just skills and titles?
That's a great question. I would say cultural fit is one thing, because I lead a global team, and there's different types of clients. They have different cultures. There are some clients that have a very, for example, enterprises. They have a very corporate culture, a lot of communications, a lot of formalities. So if I have somebody who knows how to do the work, but they're good at doing presentations, being very formal and corporate, those are the type of people I would fit into that. There are some cultures that are more laid back. You know, there are some cultures that allow experimentation. So it just varies. But culture, I think, is one of the key things.
Well, so how do you make that leadership personal? Because, you know, that's one of the things a good leader is, right? We have a personal relationship with the people we lead. So, and Chichi, you've talked to me a lot about this over time, but Atari, how do you make your leadership personal when your team might only see you in a box on the screen, like our viewers are going to see us a little bit later?
Great question. So what I do, obviously, is I try to have a lot of one-on-ones, and I try to ensure that it's visual, that we can see each other, because it makes a lot of difference. If you're just talking on the phone, or you're using like Zoom or Teams without seeing the person, it's different. So I think that's one of the key things I do. The other thing that I do is I try to meet in person when I can. For example, I did travel to the UK for personal stuff, but I had some team members that I hadn't even met for the first time at all. So I decided to work from the office in the UK and actually meet them in person. I had some other folks fly in, because some of them were in Germany and other places, because it's important. So, you know, definitely FaceTime in is very, very important, but visually, no, you have to have. And the second thing, try and meet as much as possible. I even encourage that within my team as well. So if people are in a specific locality, you guys are encouraged to go into the office or meet up. That is very, very important, especially in this age of global and distributed teams. It's still very important to have that connection and a bond.
I'd like to go back to that culture statement you made earlier. Yes, you lead globally. So there's multiple cultures you're talking about here. There's individual cultures, which you need to put into consideration on your leadership and how you lead one-on-one from a distance. But there's organizational culture too, right? Every organization has their culture. Even ones that haven't sat down to define a culture, you have a default culture.
That's true.
Which is the conglomerate of what is culture? Sometimes we hear culture, we're like, oh yeah, is this thing? It is how we get work done, right? How you as a group of people choose to get work done. If you don't define it, the people there and how they do work will define it. So when you're going through in this, bear that in mind. What culture are you going into? How's that culture? And selecting, you said something, culture is important. Selecting somebody that will fit the culture. Just hiring somebody because they're proficient, but they're going to come and alienate everybody else on the team when a team is supposed to be collaborative. Now, is that the person to hire?
No. And yeah, to your point, I mean, that's important to identify, right? Culture is important. Like you mentioned right now, there's companies that could also have a collaboration culture. You know, like enterprises are like that. It's better to over-communicate. So if I have somebody who's a great communicator, who's very formal, those are the people I will pair. There's some other cultures that they just care about getting the work done, guess what? I'm going to use that guy who's an introvert, who doesn't like to be in the spotlight, but he can get things done. He's on that project, right? So it just varies. Everybody has a different culture. Regardless of whether the culture was defined by the customer or it grew organically, which a lot of companies have organic culture, I don't really care the source, but what I care about is what is the culture, and I adapt to what it is, right? So very, very interesting. I mean, and these are the aspects of people leadership that a lot of
people... Here's another place. You just mentioned another place where your Clifton strengths come into play. Your individualization help you identify who is who and what they like.
Yes.
But for those that don't have individualization in their top five, that doesn't mean you can't do it. There's other ways. There's other games. How do I get to know my team? What do you like to do? What annoys you? So there's other ways to get to know your team. So you are pairing them with the work that pulls on their strength.
Exactly. Now, I think strengths, anybody can do anything that is someone else's strength. It's just going to take longer. Strengths just means that you can do those things a little bit more efficient. Right? So you could teach someone a way to be strategic. But if you think about, for example, strategy, it is a formal process that you're taking. Regardless of what you think, though, it's instinct and whatnot, you're still making a bunch of split decisions very rapidly that sometimes you're not even aware of. I remember I was working for one of my bosses at the company, and there was a problem, and I looked at it and I said, okay, this is what we should do. And this is the right approach, right? And there was a little bit of frustration because everybody in the team didn't know how I came to that. Even me, I didn't know. So I had to sit back and think and say, okay, this is why I made this. This is why I made that. And everybody was on the same page. And he told me, he says, you have that instinct, a natural instinct for things, but sometimes you got to bring everyone with you. So I think in line of my discussion, anybody can be taught the strengths. It just might take a little longer.
Hold on, Anthony. I see your question. Anybody can be taught, but let's look at it this way. I'm right-handed. Writing with my right hand doesn't take anything. Mm-hmm. I can write with my left hand. But do you know what concentration I have to put in just to write one alphabet that I just write without thinking?
I guarantee.
That's the difference.
I guarantee if you practice writing with your left hand.
Exactly.
Be proficient.
Exactly. There's no question about it, right? But the point of it is, what are you going to do? Which one are you going to be more efficient and productive with? If I'm in my strength, I'm a lot more productive. Just like you talked about, you come in, strategy comes in and you can see. You've gone through different iterations of what could happen and say, this is the one that will work. But somebody that doesn't have strategic is sitting there like, why are you being bossy? Let's talk about it. Like, you're just taking over. Why should we do what you said? Mm-hmm. But then as a leader, and somebody in a collaborative environment, is to say, okay, there's five ways we can go. Here is the pitfalls of this one. And this is why this solution, that's the bringing people along, letting them see the process. Many times when people see the process, they're okay. If they don't see that you went through the process, they just think you're being bossy. Mm-hmm. Yes, Anthony.
Well, no, I was going to go back to just, you know, he said he leads a lot through one-on-one. So as a guy who used to lead, you know, by wireframes, right? Because you're an architect and systems engineer. And now you lead through one-on-ones. What's been like one of your go-to hacks or habits to kind of keep people seen and heard, not just, well, scoped, you know, in your language?
I see. So I do a lot of delegation, and I like people to be empowered. So, I think that's one of the ways for the folks to be heard, because everybody can contribute. You're not the smartest person in the room. Regardless of how intelligent you are, there's always smarter people. There's always people that are better at different things. So I tend to let the folks, hey, what would you do here? Or what's the recommendation? So that's one of the things there, as opposed to me just saying, and in some cases, right, I do know what the right solution might be, but rather than trying to dictate and force it, you kind of let the folks figure it out by themselves. Sometimes they come to the conclusion that you came to. Sometimes they could have something you didn't even think of. Empowering them to make decisions. But again, with decisions, you're responsible for the outcomes. So
absolutely.
It's always a balance.
You know, as the CEO of performance scoring, I've struggled here. I'm just like right now, quick to speak sometimes. And when you do that, especially with subordinates around, one, they'll give you the space to speak, and then you've already impacted everybody's kind of group thought by the leader speaking first. One of the hardest things for any leader to do is to sit back when they know the answer, or they believe that they know the answer, and let everyone conversate and throw out their ideas. I mean, I think, Simon Sinek talks a lot about this, about force yourself to be the last guy, if you're the leader, to speak. So that way everybody can get their full thoughts out, unadulterated, without having to feel like they need to conform to a leader's view or concept or strategy.
Not all situations. Sometimes I crack a joke. I say sometimes dictatorships are necessary, right? There's sometimes where things are critical. We got to get it done.
Sure.
There is no democracy. But, you know, you have an idea, you're in that group setting, and you start up with it first. It's kind of like an analogy I like to use is, you know, you give birth to the baby and let people start trying to dress the baby up, as opposed to letting multiple people try to give birth to the baby. It's not a strong analogy, but you get the idea. So sometimes you know where you're going, you know what needs to be done, and you're setting the standard that people, the foundation that people can build on top of. Because sometimes if you just let it open and this one has this idea, this one has that, you're getting pulled in all directions. And you might not get to certain stages. So it's a balance, right?
Sure.
But it depends on what stage you are in, right? There is a time for ideas, the ideation.
True.
There's a time where you're brainstorming, but there is time for solution. Mm-hmm. But here's the truth of it all when it comes to leadership. We talked about, Anthony, in the last episode, we talked about types. There's different frames and different timing calls for different leadership, right? If somebody is new to work, being directive and saying, go do this and here's how you do it is what you do. If people is like where you like to be, hands off. More laissez-faire leadership is when you know this is a professional and they've done it many times. This is what needs to be done. Go do it. But in all of that, the type of leaders that people gravitate towards, Terry, you mentioned it earlier, is a leader that clearly tells you what they need from you and allows you to go do it. Because you hire these people because they have the skills to do their work. So now allow them to go do it. The other character of a good leader is a leader that gives you room to grow, right? And sometimes growing is letting people, what you said earlier, letting them come to that decision instead of spoon feeding it to them. And in that, the leader grows too, because there's an idea that you might not have thought of, they bring into it. That makes it even a better solution, right? So if we're talking about, if you want people to follow, the visionary leaders, the leader that people want to follow, are the ones that clearly state what they want, give you room to go there and correct you, thereby growing you to step into their role. That's what you're indirectly doing. Mm-hmm. A leader is to grow, when you leave somebody, they should be better.
Exactly.
Than they were when they met you.
Yeah, and one of my mentors did say something similar to this, is that a sign of a good leader is the way you build a team and you leave and it's highly functional and effective, right? You've done your job. Now, you know, some people might say, no, they want to be there, and you know, if they leave, but at the end of the day, if you want to figure out a good leader is building good teams and letting these teams run without too much of your interference with them, right? So the things that you just mentioned, defining clearly what needs to happen, getting the right folks and letting them grow, empowering them to make decisions. I think that that's the way that that served me well. And I mean, I like to be led that way. So I do.
Me too.
But I think it does work. I think majority of people, they want to do what they like. You tell them what to get done. And that's majority of people's style.
It is truth. So Anthony, did you want to say something on this topic?
Oh, no, that's fine. I've got okay. Other questions though. Okay.
So I have one interesting question. You know, we've talked about predictability, your human not being predictable. So tell me one human leadership moment that caught you off guard, mm-hmm. but taught you something very lasting.
Interesting. I think there's a couple. I'm trying to find a good one. That is a good one. Where do I start?
Anywhere you want.
I think mine is when things happen, or when you talk to somebody and you have an agreement of what needs to happen, you guys think you're on the same page, there's things to validate that. And then when push comes to shove and those things that didn't get done and the person changes or says something completely different, that is very alarming, right? Because it's like you have an agreement with someone, right? This is what you've agreed to. These are the parameters. And then afterwards, things didn't go accordingly. And then they change it. And it's like, whoa, what's going on, right? So that was very surprising for me. Because I think there's this tendency that people should behave how you behave. If you're generally nice to people, you expect everybody to be nice. If you're this, you just expect. If you're truthful, if you're this, you expect everybody to do the same thing.
And it would be nice if the world worked like that.
Yeah, but you forget about it sometimes. So it's like, okay, yeah, we agree to this and whatnot, and then they say something completely different, and you know, it's like that is very surprising, right? So those are some of the things from a leadership perspective that threw me off guard, and it's stuff that I've added. Have contingencies for as part of my.
So strategy. What did you learn from it though?
What I learned from it, people are not to be trusted.
That's a jaded view, Atari.
People are not to be trusted and you still got to work with people.
Yeah, true. Honestly, that's what I, you know, you can't blindly trust in everyone. And you always have to have contingencies in place. Regardless, yeah.
No, I was just going to say trust is one of those things you have to give before you can ever receive. You know, it's kind of one of those tough things in life where it requires you to go out on the limb to receive it back. Chi-Chi, it sounds like you were going to...
No, you just mentioned that trust thing. People really, really don't realize that it takes giving trust to get it. Now, imagine when somebody did something that is egregious. They know it, you know it, but you decide to trust them to do something. The good at heart will never want to break your heart again. And that's really the foundation of trust. But many a times, unfortunately, leaders want the trust without having to give it.
That's right.
And if you read the speed of trust, you got to give to get. And as leaders, we need to learn to give trust. Don't blindly give trust that is going to hurt you, but you start giving trust.
And it's hard to do because, Chi-Chi, I saw a study, and I'm going to probably misquote this. Nope, I remember it. This was Gallup in 2023, State of the Global Workforce report. It's an annual report that they do. Only 1 in 5 employees strongly agree that they trust,
the organization's
leadership. Only 1 in 5 employees. So it's, and it's our, even you just said, you know, kind of a don't trust it. You know, it's like, what are the phrases? Trust, but verify, right? There's all these like little, you know, idioms and stuff that we can use, but it is such a hard thing to trust first, right? But the second you extend that olive branch of trust, you start to build a formative relationship, right? Because the second I know that Chi-Chi implicitly trusts me, now I'm a little bit more trusting in her choices as a leader, right? As somebody who's making a decision. So just the act, and it's free. This is one of the really interesting things about leadership. Trust is actually doesn't cost you a thing. Now it can end up costing you a lot, but in the first act of it, in the moment of me handing you my trust, right, it doesn't cost me anything. What it buys me is somewhat of a reciprocation down the road, right? Because you know that I have given you my trust. When we come to that crossroad in a week or month, 2 months down the road, and I ask you to do something and it requires a little bit of faith, a little bit of trust, you can kind of trade that trust currency that I paid you earlier, right? And there's a little bit of a reciprocation game that plays. So trust is, as a leader, one of the most important things that you can provide your people.
Yeah, but trust is earned. So I, in my experience, right, I don't give people trust immediately, but I do give you the benefit of the doubt and you have to earn my trust. It's more of if somebody does something and they maybe mess up or something happens, I don't just say, I don't trust you, can't do anything else. I give you the benefit of the doubt, but trust has to be earned. I'm not going to have somebody that I see what they do and there's this very important project that's crazy and critical. And then I just put you in there and I trust you. You know, I'm going to give
trust, right? Let's talk about building it. You have to give it, right? What you call benefit of doubt, that you ask somebody that you don't know if they can do something or not. I said, I've seen you. I want you to do this. That's a level of trust in that, right?
Hold on.
That's a level of giving it. And when they prove it, that's when you say they've earned it. But that the fact that you gave them the task to do, it's an extension of trust. And going back to what Anthony said earlier about the Gallup report, if you start unpacking that, I know the report doesn't unpack it. If you unpack that, it's a transparency issue. right? Leaders come and make decisions and say, we're going this way and this happened and this happened, but they're not bringing people along. There's no transparency. So people don't know. You see, Anthony did one thing. I'm the leader and I reacted this way to Anthony. You did the same thing or something similar and I react a different way. And I'm not saying why the difference is, right? So anybody else there is just filling the reason with their own neurosis or where they are from or what their issue is at that time. So do you see how giving, just telling people, bringing people along and saying, this is the decision. This is how we came to the decision, to the extent that you can. It's not everything that you can share. And anybody that have been in leadership for a day can tell there's not every information that you want to share, but as much as you can share, bring it along. That's extending that olive branch of trust.
Yeah, so I think we might be using different terminology, right? In terms of trust or benefit of the doubt, I do, in my career, my experience so far, is that trust is earned. No matter what happens, you have to earn trust. I have to earn the trust of my workers, and they have to earn my trust. In terms of trust, I try to be as transparent as possible. I try to be fair. I try to do all those things, and they can see that, oh, here's my vision and here's what's going on. But from their point of view, I want to make sure that they can handle certain things first before I trust them with key important things. So that's how I look at it.
Yeah, I think we're saying a lot of the same thing. First off, you know, this isn't a mutually exclusive thing. You either trust or you don't trust. Trust is a, I trust my wife.
It's a continuum.
Yeah, that's right. I was going to say how I trust my wife is different than how I trust an acquaintance, right? And this is one thing I will say too, you know, just kind of keeping on the tech thing, like, oh God, what is this? Trust is like Wi-Fi, right? It's invisible. It's easy to lose. And everything stops working when it's gone.
If you don't have it, it's true.
It's a requirement for business, trust is. But I'm so intrigued on this because I think most leaders actually, this is one thing I think that every leader can identify with, this trust conversation. I didn't know that this is where we're going to spend kind of some of our time today, but I think this is so important for our listeners because for our listeners out there, guys, if we're being real with ourselves, this is one of the hardest things to do as leaders is to give that trust, to go out on a limb and say, you know what, I'm going to give you this, as Atari said, the benefit of the doubt to start, and then I'm going to let you build trust as we go. And that's how he's explaining it. And I think we actually identify and is from a human standpoint that as well. Take yourself out of business and just in how you live life. We implicitly want to believe that what people are telling us or how people are acting, they have the right, they have the right interest at heart, right? But it's not until we see the outcome or the outcomes over time that trust either grows or diminishes. Exactly. But I think as leaders, we're all struggling because how much trust is required to start? How much trust? Because Atari, you know, you just said something really interesting a minute ago. You said, well, I give them the benefit of the doubt. How much trust is the benefit of the doubt? I would argue it's actually a pretty good amount of trust, right?
It is.
It's
on a scale. Right? It's on a scale. You're not going to give your 5-year-old the cars to your kids,
exactly.
The keys to your car, right? You're not. But you allow them to do little things. And as they prove that, the trust is building.
Exactly.
But you gave them something. It's little by little. And this is a key thing for somebody that, like you, Itari, that went from technical proficiency, technical influence to people leadership, right? And you mentioned it earlier. Before, when things need to do, I know how to do it, I go do it, right? But for a leader stepping into especially if you're leading people in the area that you're proficient in, is to say, yes, I know how to do it, but I'm going to allow them to do it, right? And give them a time frame. So this is how you bridge that gap between what people call soft skills, right? Little by little, I can do it, yes, but you can't do it all. And after all, it's not your role anymore.
Very true.
Your role is more strategic overview and let others go do it. So how do you let them do it? It's just little by little releasing.
I think it's really hard. I've learned this lesson. So, you know, I obviously performance scoring is a meeting management platform. So I build technology on a daily basis. I'm not great at it. I'm dangerous. I can break any kind of technology, just for the record. But you know, this kind of just hit me as we're talking about it. Trust isn't earned after someone proves themselves. It's built when you give them the space to try. So I want to back that out. So, you know, I kind of have a tendency, or I think I used to have a tendency to treat people, I want to keep it on brand here, maybe treat people like a USB drive. Like I had to safely eject my own expectations and scan for viruses before I could really trust them. But one day, Atari, I bet this, you're familiar with this. I mean, you go through developers, right? I mean, like, you know, everybody has different skills. Nobody lasts forever. And one day we had a brand new junior developer on staff. I barely knew him. And they caught a bug in our production environment before it went live. And they didn't ask for permission. They just acted. And I think that's when it hit me that trust isn't really earned after someone proves themselves. It's built when you give them the space to try. And I think if we kind of take that approach as leaders, it's hard to do because it takes faith, you know, a little bit, right? Because I'm kind of believing in something that I haven't yet seen. And it provides that room. So I still scan the room here, guys. I mean, I'm not like, this isn't some like, oh, epiphany, I've learned this perfectly. But I try to lead with trust, not suspicion. And I think it turns out people really rise to the level of trust you hand them. Because I really think that it's, again, it's that currency, right? We just got done talking about it. It's like it's like an exchange, right? So I think people rise to that level of trust that you give them and not just to the title, right? So at least that...
Part of building that trust is what you just said, Anthony. It's creating an environment where that person can act, right? There are environments that will not allow a junior developer to act when they see something. That you now put all this red tape. You have to go to this person and report. You're creating an environment not to see the ability to trust that person. Now, this junior developer saw a bug and was able to take care of it, which started building that trust for you. But if you don't create that environment where things like that can do, you're hampering the ability for trust
develop and grow. But so you run into the situation where you create that environment of trust, the junior developer makes a change and crashes the whole system.
Oh, no. Look, by the way, that's happened too. And that trust tree dies a little bit.
Exactly. So like you said, Anthony, earlier on, you scan the room, right? I think there's some folks that I know that are sharp. Because I've done this as well too. And it's like, we call it trust, but you give them the benefit of the doubt for something a lot larger, right? So you scan the room and everything else, but there still has to be that vetting, right? There needs to be that, okay, I know who you are. This is what you're capable of. And then now we can go in and do bigger things together. So
But when we're saying all of this, we need to remember you don't just give and hands off. That you gave somebody trust, right? Doesn't mean you throw them in the deep end and say, good luck. That's building trust. There's still check-ins. There's still guardrails, right? It's not that you just trust that you go sink or swim. Mm-hmm. There is still that check-in to protect the end product.
I want to transition this conversation because I think trust is directly connected with performance. I know the Harvard Business Review, I think this is on our website actually, but teams with high trust levels outperform low trust teams by up to 10% in productivity. And that study was done by the Neuroscience of Trust by Paul J. Zak. So anybody wants to fact check me, but teams with high trust levels outperform low trust teams by up to 50% in productivity. So let's kind of transition this conversation from trust into performance, because Atara, you don't get where you're at in your career without performing at a very high level and bringing people along with you in that high performance. So when you think about your team's performance, Atari, where does recognition come in? And how are you shaping a culture that doesn't just reward results? Because I know you said you're results oriented, but how are you shaping a culture that doesn't just reward results, but also effort and intention?
So unfortunately, I have a different mindset, right? It's results over everything. Intention can be right, but I don't have this mindset of reward and intention. I think at the end of the day, in anything that we do, it's always results. So there could be some good intentions, but ultimately that should lead towards some sort of result. So for example, if there's somebody who is a mentor, right? They do results, they still deliver what they need to deliver, but they're a good mentor, they're talking to other folks in the team, they feel like calm, at ease. Those types of intangibles, I think ultimately tie into, at the end of the day, results. I mean, I still encourage things like that, but for me, I like to see how does this eventually lead to something, a tangible result for my group and my team? And that's kind of how I look at it. It might be ideal. Some of the people think differently. But for me, that's just, it's results over everything. It's kind
of look, Atari, you,
so
hold on, Shiji. I just want to respond to this. This is a really unique thing for our listeners because Atari is in application development. It is science. It is logic. It is 1 + 1 always equals 2. And this is actually this is why it's so great to have you on, Atari, because of the position that you're in inside the industry that you're in, because I think this is where there is a rub, right? Chichi, I want you to piggyback on this because I think, you know, leadership theory, organizational leadership probably speaks to this a lot differently than maybe Atari inside of your workspace. It does. Cause I hear that you're the results guy, but you know, what actually gets you those results? It's not just the code shipped or the tickets closed. It's the guy that's staying late at night, the messy pivots, the teammate who stepped in when it wasn't their job. If we only reward the scoreboard, we're missing part of the game, you know, the effort and intention. And I'm talking about this in a holistic picture, not just specifically inside your industry, because it's the effort and intention. That's kind of the fuel, right? I think that helps fuel consistency. Recognition's not just about a pat on the back. I mean, everybody, I think, likes that, but about reinforcing the behaviors that you want to see, right? That you want to see repeated. So if your team delivers a win, but no one knew the hustle it took to get there, don't we kind of risk burning out the quiet heroes or spotlighting only on the loud finishers? I mean, there's some innate challenges. And I think this is where it's really great to have you on, Atari, because you're in such a binary position, right? It is mutually exclusive. It did work or it didn't work. The results, it makes perfect sense in the space that you're in. But Chichi, I want to give you the mic here because I think this is what, like, there's a friction here, right? Like a natural one.
I'm going to do something that people that know me will laugh at right now. Let's look at basketball. By the way, there is records for assists, right? They track how many assists somebody had. It didn't result in a goal and they didn't score, but they helped somebody else score, right? And they track that. So this is what we're looking at. Because it's just like if somebody didn't rebound the ball, catch it and pass it off to where the opponents are not and free somebody else to score, that score would never have happened, correct?
It's true, but you guys have proven one of my points. At the end of the
day... No, hold on, let me land.
Okay.
My point is the productivity, and my point is measuring all the things, right? Not excuses, not I should have, but I didn't, I meant to. That's not what we're talking about. It's people that saw something, picked it up, or saw something and spoke up and said, ooh, this, that made them correct the code that went on to become productive on time or fixed an error. Finding ways to reward that builds that, right? It creates that environment of trust that we're all in this together. Go ahead. You've been itching to say something.
I'm itching to say something, yeah. I want to use the basketball analogy as well, too. So there are some folks that in a basketball game could run up and down a lot, run maybe 5 miles, 6 miles. We don't track that because running up and down 5 miles, 6 miles doesn't help the team. Right. But the other things that you mentioned, assists, rebounds, all those things are kind of intangibles, but they still end up in scoring a point. It still ends up in everything else. So that's why those things are noticed. So like I mentioned early on, if somebody has the right intention of something, however, it leads to a result, in this case, using the basketball analogy, a goal, then yes, I reward that. I bring it up. I say, okay, this is good. But as long as we can see what they did and how it tied to an end goal. But if somebody has an intent and they're doing something, but there's no reward, like in a basketball game, you're running out for 6 miles, but it doesn't end up in anything, then why will I reward that? Good job. You've been running for 6 miles and wow. But they don't do that. So ultimately, the intangibles always lead to results somehow. That's kind of how I look at that.
Well, I think it's important. I think you just kind of, you know, one, you brought it back to your results kind of orientation. I think you're talking about leadership because it's on the scoreboard. Exactly. You know, assists are on the scoreboard. right? I mean, you know, you see that right next to the points. So but this is where I still think it's unique is that, you know, you're in a, it either, the code either works or it doesn't. It doesn't matter how much work you spent on creating broken code. I know this in my own world as well. Now there is something to be said for, you know, I still believe there's something to be said for the effort and intention, but effort and intention isn't an outcome. It's
so, Anthony, let me reword your original question a little bit. So the question is, Itari, what is in your scorecard for rewards?
Great question.
What are the things that you have on your scorecard that are not necessarily the score using basketball, but that are the intangibles that help the end goal, that is being measured, that helps motivate people to do more?
Yeah, the contributing factors.
Great question. I think positive attitude is one thing. You want somebody who's positive, somebody who is motivated. You need people that are motivated to get stuff done, because to me, that's half the, if you find somebody who's motivated to do work done, you'll be surprised at the amount of stuff that you can get in our team. So motivation, self-motivated, a positive attitude, a desire to help. I have folks on my team right now that they're working on so many different things, but you send them an email, they're responding to that. Can you help me with this? Respond to that. So that willingness to help is another key thing. So those are three I can think of right now. But all those three, if you think about it, it still ties into results somehow. But that was a good way to word the question, Chichi. Those are the three things that I reward.
I love how this conversation has kind of naturally kind of come full circle. And with this, Itari, one of the things that we like to do when we end our episodes is, what is something that today's Itari would love to tell the Itari of 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago about leadership that the young Itari didn't know?
These are very thought-provoking questions. You need to be able to embrace the fuzz. That's what I would say, embrace the fuzz. Back then, my leadership was more technical leadership and influence and was very exact. But with people leadership, it's a little bit fuzzy. So my advice is 1 + 1 doesn't always have to be 2. Sometimes it can be 3. It can be 4, depending on the context. And be willing to embrace the fuzz.
And the last question before we wrap up. What would you tell somebody considering following in your footsteps? What advice do you have to say, here are the things you need to prepare yourself for, and here are the things that if you don't get, you're going to fall on your face?
Okay. Good question. I think you have to be patient. I think you have to learn how to listen. I think you need to learn how to know when to make tough decisions. Because I know there's this thought of servant leadership and just leadership by consensus every single time. But sometimes you have, as a good leader, you need to be decisive in certain occasions. And you need to, you know, it's not that serious. You know, know how to have fun with your team. You know, you need to build an environment where people want to come to work and it's relaxed. And, you know, so those are some of the things I would say are key.
I love it. Well,
all right.
Chichi, I think we're titling this episode Embrace the Fuzz. Because well, all right, friends, that's a wrap on today's episode of Between the Ones and the Zeros. A huge thanks to our guest, Itari Agorje, for sharing not just his experience, but his honesty and intentionality. And as always, thank you to the brilliant Dr. Chichi, who keeps us thinking deeper and leading better.
Today's conversation reminded us that leadership isn't about output. It's about trust, adaptability, and an understanding that people don't always follow the script, never follows the script. And that's okay. Whether you're new to leadership or deep in the trenches, these moments in between are where the real growth happens.
That's right. Hey, guys, and if this conversation gave you something to think about, well, we hope it did, or laugh about, I know it did. Do us a favor, share it, subscribe it, hit the little bell in the top right if you're watching this on YouTube, and leave us a review. And if you want more episodes, notes, or to nominate a future guest, head over to betweentheonesandzeros.net.
Until next time, lead with curiosity, listen with intention, and stay grounded in the stuff that really matters.
We'll catch you next time, Between the Ones and the Zeros. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you.